Challenge Cyber Defense.
The cyber threat analyses you need to know about. Cyber Decryption. It's now.
This June breaking news is brought to you by the Cyber Intelligence Bureau, a division of the Epidemiology Lab at Orange Cyber Defense. The data is based on collected and cross-analyzed discussions from various hacktivist groups on Telegram channels. Here is our analysis of investigations. In a context of geopolitical tensions, this synthesis reviews hacktivist campaigns from June 2026, their targets, and operational methods. Okay, let's unpack this. Imagine a geopolitical war zone.
Right.
But, you know, erase the trenches, the artillery, and those tangible lines drawn on a map.
Just wipe them out completely.
Exactly. And replace those borders with, like, a local car wash in Spain, an automated fine payment system in France,
yeah,
and maybe a thermostat humming quietly inside a Dutch potato farm.
It sounds almost surreal when you put it like that.
It really does. But today, you and I are taking an intense, strictly open source intelligence journey straight into the dark web and the Telegram channels of global cyber threat actors. We are looking at a massive, highly coordinated digital offensive from June of 2026.
And we're analyzing what happens when the front lines of global conflict suddenly shift, you know, right into our everyday infrastructure.
Right.
But before we dive into the specific mechanics of these campaigns, it is really crucial to establish the lens we are looking through today. The information we are examining is purely of cyber origin.
So straight from the source.
Straight from the source. I mean, we are analyzing this from a strictly cyber perspective, pulling the data directly from the communications and raw chatter of these hacktivist groups. We are impartially mapping the reality of the contemporary threat landscape to understand the how and the what of these operations. We are absolutely not endorsing the messages or taking any political sides regarding the claims and ideologies these groups broadcast.
Exactly. We are dissecting the methodology.
Yeah.
Not debating the politics. Because when you look at the sheer scale of the digital activity in the June 2026 data, you immediately realize that cyber campaigns of this magnitude don't just spontaneously generate.
No, they always require a catalyst.
Right. So looking at the geopolitical tension situations, I have to ask, what specific real-world events are driving this massive surge of digital activity in June 2026?
Right.
Because cyber attacks don't just happen in a vacuum.
They really don't. And if you point directly to the sources, the primary catalyst is overwhelmingly tethered to the G7 summit.
Ah, the one held in Evian-les-Bains, France.
Yes, right in the middle of June, from the 15th to the 17th. The timing is undeniably synchronized. The hacktivist chatter explicitly ties their attacks to France holding the G7 presidency.
Because they were hosting all those global leaders.
Yeah, exactly. You had leaders from the US, the UK, Germany, Japan, Canada, and Italy. They were all gathering to discuss economic sanctions and continued military supply chains for Ukraine.
And the hacktivists were watching.
Very closely. These groups viewed the diplomatic gathering as a direct provocation. So they orchestrated this massive wave of targeted network disruptions designed to hit French infrastructure while the global spotlight was on Evian-les-Bains.
But the tensions extend way beyond the G7, don't they? Because the sources reveal hackers targeting Germany explicitly, too.
Oh, absolutely. And it wasn't just broad, opportunistic DDoS attacks. They were bringing receipts.
What do you mean?
Well, they specifically cited German military supply chains and alleged that Germany was sheltering Israeli intelligence. And they didn't just make the claim. They backed it up by dumping internal government documents straight into their Telegram channels.
Wow. What kind of documents are we talking about here?
The geopolitical landscape painted by these channels shows a highly reactive cyber front. They circulated a German BND intelligence document from June 16th, using it as public justification for their strikes.
Wait, the BND, like the Federal Intelligence Service.
Exactly.
That is a massive embarrassment for them.
It is, but it actually goes even higher up the chain than the BND.
Seriously?
Yeah. There was a NATO document from June 11th regarding Eastern Flank fuel reserves.
Oh, wait. The one stamped Cosmic Top Secret. I saw that in the source files.
Yes. Literally NATO's highest classification level. Waving a document like that around on a public Telegram channel isn't just a data breach.
It's a flex.
It is a loud, aggressive signal that they have eyes deep inside the most secure geopolitical planning rooms on the planet. It is a demonstration of access.
It really is. Okay, let's move into the key actors and operational alliances, because when you bring up the groups claiming responsibility, this looks way less like isolated hackers, you know, in basements, and more like organized, allied, digital militias.
Highly structured militias, yeah.
Right. And the most dominant name in the data seems to be No name 05716.
They are a massive presence. According to the intelligence, they were already responsible for roughly a third of all tracked cyber attacks in the first quarter of 2026.
33%. That's huge.
And their operational tempo in June was just relentless.
They operate with the footprint of a major corporation.
Mm-hmm.
And they are sharing the battlefield with other highly specialized outfits.
Definitely. You've got Cardinal, for example. They are a group allied with the Russian Legion, and they seem to treat their operations almost like theatrical productions.
Theatrical how?
Well, they don't just want to breach a system. They want to leave a psychological mark. They want an audience. But then on the entirely opposite end of the spectrum, you have the Dark Storm team.
Okay, how are they different?
From the sources, they look less like ideological warriors and more like a commercial enterprise. They literally operate a DDoS-for-hire business model.
Wait, so you can just pay them to attack someone?
Exactly. They commercialize the disruption. Dark Storm Team offers tiered pricing for their infrastructure, allowing third parties to essentially rent out botnets for targeted takedowns.
Man, it's like watching rival corporate conglomerates suddenly merge. Because you see explicit alliances forming not just in Eastern Europe, but across the globe.
Right, the cross-hemisphere pacts.
Yeah. I saw joint declarations of unity between Eastern European collectives and Indonesian groups.
Groups with names like GhostNet X, Pfizer X-Man, and Brotherhood Kepung Indonesia.
Yes. It reads like a corporate merger. But practically speaking, why bother formalizing a digital pact? I mean, it's not like they are sharing a physical office building.
What's fascinating here is how these alliances actually work on a technical level. Mm. The motivation behind these pacts is raw operational bandwidth.
So they share resources.
Exactly. By formalizing an alliance, they're establishing secure pipelines to share API keys, rent out proxy networks, and pool their botnet infrastructure.
I see.
Think about the logistics of a massive DDoS campaign. If an Eastern European group wants to overwhelm a European target, routing all that malicious traffic through local servers might trigger regional threat detection systems.
Oh, because all the traffic is coming from one geographic area.
Right. But if they can borrow the residential IP networks of an allied group in Indonesia, they can distribute the attack traffic globally. It completely obfuscates the origin and exponentially multiplies their collective firepower.
So they are essentially load balancing their digital artillery across global time zones.
That's a great way to put it.
That is wild. All right, let's dive into the analysis of attack vectors and sectoral targets. Because shifting focus to what these groups are actually hitting, I was genuinely surprised.
It's not just websites anymore.
Not at all. It's physical infrastructure. I mean, look at the Dutch agricultural company Machat Peak and ZN in Flevoland.
That's a perfect example.
The hackers bypassed the network security and completely seized their climate control system. They manipulated the storage chamber temperatures for hundreds of tons of potatoes and onions.
Yeah, we are moving out of the realm of simple data theft and into deep SCADA and industrial control system, or ICS, exploitation. The attack vectors detailed in the June synthesis are terrifyingly tangible.
Which is incredibly alarming.
Beyond the commercial farm, there is a documented takeover of a private Dutch property's fundamental heating and water systems.
Like someone's actual property.
Yes. They compromised the heat pump, the electric boiler, and the motorized valves. And they didn't just turn the system off, they manipulated the system timeouts, setting them to an extreme 500-999 seconds.
I want to pause on that detail because manipulating a timeout sounds like, I know, a minor software glitch. But in the context of an industrial boiler, that is a physical threat.
A very serious one.
If you override the thermal safety limits and force an electric boiler to run for 5,999 seconds without cycling off, you are intentionally trying to cause a catastrophic overheating event. You were trying to blow the pipes.
Exactly. And they did something similar with water supplies in Spain, compromising the centrifugal pumps and pivot irrigation systems across the La Mancha agricultural zone.
Okay, but I have to ask. To take over a Spanish irrigation system or a Dutch boiler, are these groups using incredibly advanced million-dollar zero-day exploits to crack these systems?
No, and that is the terrifying truth found in the source logs. It points to systemic negligence.
Really?
Yeah, they are largely walking through wide open doors. Let's look at the breach of ACER, the European Union Agency for the Cooperation of Energy Regulators.
A massive, highly critical target.
Right. When the group Cardinal penetrated their network, they didn't boast about cracking an impossible firewall. They explicitly mocked the agency. Cardinal posted a screenshot proving they had root access and publicly stated, quote, "This is not a zero day, a key left in a lock by your own engineers."
Root access, meaning they had total unrestricted administrative control over the European Union's energy regulator.
Right.
Simply because someone forgot to secure a credential.
Exactly. And they maintained that undetected root access for 14 days.
14 days. Mm-hmm. 2 whole weeks.
Yes. They engaged in what we call living off the land, moving laterally through the network without triggering alarms because they were using legitimate administrative tools.
That's just way.
During those 2 weeks, they extracted password databases and actively mapped out the network architecture of 14 different national energy operators connected to the ACR hub.
They weren't just vandalizing the lobby. They were systematically copying the blueprints to the entire European energy grid. Okay, let's look at the analysis. European countries, cyber attacks specifically. Because looking at the broader map, Europe bore the absolute brunt of these campaigns in June.
The geographic spread was relentless.
Just looking at the French targets hit during the G7, the sheer volume was staggering. You have massive entities like the energy company EDF, the French Senate, but then they also focused on highly regional infrastructure, going after portals from Dunkirk to Moselle.
And it wasn't just government or energy infrastructure.
No, they hit mundane local businesses too. A Renault and Dacia dealership in Orange. A Polaris ATV dealership in Saint-Étienne. They were literally logging into the dealership cameras just to watch the mechanics working in the bays.
Yeah, the map is very broad. In Germany, Cardinal launched Operation 1945, issuing a public 24-hour ultimatum to the government regarding their military supply chains, backed by heavy network disruptions.
And the UK got hit hard too, right?
Very hard. The UK saw massive waves of traffic aimed at National Rail, the Ministry of Defense, and aerospace manufacturing components. Italy was hit across multiple sectors, Telecom Italia, regional SCADA systems, and even the CCTV network of a local gaming hall.
Gaming hall?
Yeah. And they took Luxembourg's National Railway Company and Ministry of Digitalization completely offline.
But nestled among all these massive national targets, there's a breach in Spain that I find absolutely fascinating. Amidst the attacks on the agricultural pumps in La Mancha, they took the time to breach a Chicago car wash.
A car wash, yes.
They seized control of the HMI panel, the human-machine interface that controls the brushes, the high-pressure foam, the tracks. A local car wash, I mean, taking down the Ministry of Defense makes strategic sense. But what does hacking a car wash mean for the listener? Why dedicate international resources to that?
Well, if we connect this to the bigger picture, hitting a local car wash or an Italian gaming hall is a highly calculated footprint. It is a psychological demonstration.
Also,
if they only attack military mainframes, the average citizen feels disconnected from the cyber war. It feels abstract. But by reaching into a local car wash and taking control of the physical machinery, they are sending a visceral message that no European infrastructure, big or small, is insulated.
I see.
They are shattering the illusion of safety by demonstrating that they can manipulate the immediate, mundane, physical environment of any citizen at will.
They are saying, if we can control the heavy machinery spinning around your car, what else are we already controlling?
Exactly.
Which brings us directly into the how of these operations, specifically their operational tactics and methods. Because there's a campaign detailed in the June data called Broken Byte. And it represents a terrifying evolution in how these groups operate.
Broken Byte is a masterclass in weaponizing negligence at scale.
Can you explain what this entails?
Sure. It was executed as a joint operation between No Name 05716 and a threat actor known as Palak Pro. According to the cross-analyzed data, this specific operation successfully compromised and cataloged 50,000 CCTV cameras across Europe and Ukraine.
50,000 individual video feeds. The logistics of just finding that many vulnerable cameras is mind-boggling.
It relies entirely on automation and weak network hygiene. The operation utilized specialized scanning software designed to sweep massive pools of IP addresses, specifically hunting for common IP cameras, predominantly brands like Hikvision and Dahua.
The ones you can buy pretty much anywhere.
Right. These devices are frequently installed with zero network segmentation, meaning they are exposed directly to the open internet. And more importantly, they're often left with their standard factory default administrator passwords.
So the hackers didn't even have to hack anything, really.
No, they simply ran a script that knocked on thousands of IP doors and logged in wherever the default password still worked.
Here's where it gets really interesting, though. Once they had root access to those 50,000 cameras, they didn't just set up a massive wall of monitors and sit there watching empty streets and parking lots. They plugged AI into them.
They did. This represents a massive escalation in operational capability.
This is terrifying.
They connected neural networks to the hijacked IP pools. This AI was specifically programmed for real-time object capture and categorization. It wasn't just passively recording, it was actively scraping the feeds for facial recognition data.
So it's actively hunting?
Yes, it was logging license plates, identifying the makes and colors of passing vehicles, and even categorizing the clothing of pedestrians.
They effectively built a shadow intelligence agency out of thin air. They took 50,000 unsecured civilian cameras, piped the video through an AI, and instructed it to package all that granular data faces, plates, cars, with precise GPS coordinates, creating a fully searchable real-time tracking database.
And this wasn't deployed by a state intelligence apparatus with a billion-dollar budget. It was built by a hacktivist collective leveraging default passwords and open-source neural networks.
That technical sophistication is staggering. But that leads us perfectly into the motivation and psychological profiling, or the inferences we can draw here. Because when you read the actual messages and manifestos these groups leave behind, you realize the technology is just a means to an end.
Oh, absolutely. The tone of their communications is dripping with this theatrical mockery.
Yes. They have a deep, almost cinematic desire to humiliate their targets.
Mm.
There is a quote in the data from Cardinal regarding their Operation Kronos that really sticks with you. They wrote, quote, "Kronos does not destroy, it erases. First you will lose connection, then control, then the memory that you ever mattered at all."
If we unpack the psychological profile behind statements like that, it becomes clear that the motivation extends far beyond political retaliation or data theft. This is pure, distilled psychological warfare. The ultimate objective is the systematic breaking of civilian morale. They want the population to feel a sense of pervasive, inescapable vulnerability.
You see that perfectly illustrated in the breach of the National Automobile Museum in Mulhouse, France.
That's a great example.
They didn't lock down the museum's servers and demand a ransom. They simply hacked into the security feeds and publicly posted that they were watching the museum-like blurry cameras.
Right. They described watching regular people casually drinking coffee and admiring classic Bugattis.
They used the mundane reality of a museum visit to mock the entire concept of European domestic security.
Because a ransomware gang wants money, but a highly ideological cyber collective wants leverage.
Leverage, yeah.
Notice the distinct absence of financial demands in these geopolitical campaigns. When Cardinal delivered their ultimatum to the German government, they explicitly stated, quote, "We ask for truth or silence." They operate similarly to digital terrorists who require a public, captive audience to achieve their goals.
They want the psychological dominance of proving they can reach into your life whenever they choose.
And that dominance is meticulously designed to sever the social contract by constantly and publicly demonstrating that the infrastructure is fragile, whether it is the internal network of the EU's energy regulator, the climate control of a local potato farm, or the security camera in a coffee shop. They are sowing deep distrust.
Right.
They want the citizen to look at their environment and conclude that if their government cannot even keep a hacker out of the neighborhood car wash, they are entirely incapable of protecting the nation from a genuine crisis.
Wow. So coming to our conclusion, the analysis of contemporary cyber activity. So what does this all mean? If we trace the entire arc of this June 2026 data, we started with a high-level geopolitical trigger diplomats gathering at a G7 summit in France to discuss sanctions and supply chains.
Right.
But the fallout from that summit cascaded into the literal manipulation of industrial boilers in the Netherlands, the silent 14-day infiltration of European energy grids using keys left in the lock, and the deployment of an AI-powered surveillance network across 50,000 compromised cameras.
It's an incredible chain of events.
These sources paint a vividly dark picture of a reality where cyber warfare is no longer confined to server rooms. It has fully permeated the physical, tangible world we walk through every single day.
My final synthesis of this intelligence is that the contemporary cyber landscape of June 2026 is defined entirely by the erasure of boundaries. The traditional compartmentalized lines separating military infrastructure, vital civilian utilities, and local small-town businesses no longer exist.
They've just vanished.
Entirely. Hacktivist collectives, empowered by global alliances and automated technology, are leveraging everyday negligence to wage complex geopolitical and psychological warfare directly against civilian populations. The threat is ubiquitous because the vulnerabilities are ubiquitous.
It fundamentally changes how you perceive your own environment. I want to leave you, the listener, with a final provocative thought to ponder, building on everything we've analyzed in these sources today. If a highly organized collective can simply scan the internet, use factory default passwords to hijack tens of thousands of cameras.
Just basic negligence.
Exactly. And then apply off-the-shelf artificial intelligence to instantly track, categorize, and log every single face and license plate that walks by. Is privacy in the modern era simply an illusion, just waiting to be shattered by whoever decides to look?
It is a chilling question.
It really is. Keep that in mind the next time you picture a geopolitical front line. Sometimes it isn't a trench on a map. Sometimes it's just the glowing red light of an unsecured camera lens looking down at you from the corner of a room. Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive.
The cyber threat analyses you need to know about. Cyber decryption. We'll be talking about it on this channel very soon.
Orange Cyber Defense.